Surveilling your activities, and I know from my sources that you've been surveilling my activities. After all, there is no privacy under satellite solar theater conditions. I'd like to feed forward some comments from the last session of the church. Mike remarked that he was finding that these last few years reminded him of the Rockefeller era, when businessmen had a higher status than politicians. Indeed, this is true for the bottom up reasons you cited. And it was Ronald Reagan, the greatest actor of the 80s, who himself said that we were not returning to the age of the businessman as robber baron. That is proof enough for me. If Ronald Reagan denies it, or can't remember it, it must be true. Mike referred to spy magazines having a dumping on Trump. And the reason it dumps on him is because its editors are Canadian. From Toronto, I believe. Toronto, of course, is home to the Rothschild-controlled Campbell-Reichman Property Developer Alliance. Well, Trump is the developer celebrity in the Rockefeller's backyard. Well, on the subject of Bobby Campo, a relative of mine bought shares in his little company through the broker Dean Ritter. The Dean reference is obvious enough. The Ritter part derives from the word right, which has amongst its many meanings, is quoted from the Oxford Dictionary, reduce nominal value of stock, cancel, recognize in writing... recognize in writing the non-existence or annulment of bad debts. Unquote. Market and other forces took Campo stock to an all-time high of $22 before it suddenly began tumbling, so that this week it may hit $2.20. The Campo-Reichman Alliance is now negotiating with Citibank, its major creditors. If talks fail, they will have no alternative but to file for protection from its creditors under Chapter 11 of the U.S. bankruptcy laws. That's half of 22. Indeed, in the last few months, the Rockefellers have been excessively whipping themselves up. The current Newsweek is running a cover story on Noriega, drugs, and the CIA. And right there on the index on page 3, they suggest Noriega may go to Alcatraz, where inmates spend 22 hours a day in solitary. In the Panamanian operation, Just Cause, The official death toll released last week was 220, while the former Attorney General Ramsey Clark suggested the real toll was in the thousands and exceeded the number killed in Tiananmen Square. And get this. A few days ago, it was reported on the radio. Oh, sorry about that, my girl. We had to change frequencies briefly there for security reasons. Let me just continue. A few days ago, it was reported on the radio that a Canadian Airlines flight returning from Europe had someone aboard with a highly contagious and potentially deadly virus, a form of meningitis. It warned that anyone who had been seated near seat 22A should go seek medical attention immediately. 22A? Just as Canadian as sugar pie. Disciple 1, over and out.
And that's it. It is a new decade. Good evening, Bob. Welcome.
Mike.
Hello.
That was an excellent report on the significance of number 22, and I've got the 22 of all 22s tonight. Last night on Frontline,
I saw it.
You watched it?
Yeah.
I bet you didn't catch this tiny fact. You remember when about the Pan Am bombing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got TV now, man. You're into it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When they showed the telegram or notice from the Federal Aviation Agency, which is called now the Helsinki Warning, you know what I'm referring to? That's the warning that went out on December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, went out to all the American embassies, but for some reason it's focused on the Helsinki embassy, right? And that's where it first came out and was exposed in all the news right after the crash. This warning, FAA, Federal Aviation Agency warning, it said FAA warning number 22. Now, can you believe that?
Hmm.
I mean, does that mean that it's a Rockefeller mission? Does that mean that they're going to nail a Rockefeller mission? And according to Skolnick, you've got the anti-Bush faction was blown up on that plane.
That's right.
That would be Bolshevik faction, maybe. So the point is that the Bolsheviks have been hijacked by nobody. They hijacked the Rockefellers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we don't know if the 22 refers to Rockefeller or Bolshevik, but definitely the 22 pattern is everywhere, as our subgenius informant just reported.
So on that flight, two CIA agents were blown up. Is that right? There were two agents on board.
That's what they say now. It was going, says there was up to 30.
Mm. But what was funny was when they had the families who were on their campaign to discover the truth behind the security, and they had a visit with the president, President Bush, and Bush said, you know, to the effect, mark my word, if there was anything to do with terrorism, we'll seek revenge.
Like they did on Libya in 86.
Yeah,
now the thing is, they mentioned in that thing there are two family groups. They're divided. Two teams of families are investigating it. They seem to hike up on this show the family that wants the retaliation by Bush,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're believing it's a terrorist group. And note that the terrorist, the main one, was situated in Sweden. And you got the Helsinki. There's a lot of Swedish involvement in this. And according to Dr. Beter, in the early 80s, Sweden and the Scandinavian countries were Bolshevik controlled. So that might give us a hint. I mean, there was a Palestinian hiding, supposedly, according to this show, in Sweden, under the guise of being a house husband. So you missed that little paper, FAA warning number 22. I'm trained to notice that, and I was watching it. I saw it, and of course, mm-hmm. I could rewind, and I really checked it out. And it's just incredible that the famous Helsinki warning is FAA number 22.
And next week's Frontline looks as promising.
Oh, yeah, more. I think Judy Woodruff will meet the same fate as Jessica Savage if she keeps this up.
Yeah.
Jessica Savage was the original host who was killed for exposing the Panama-linked Bank Ambrosiano.
The Panama link as well.
Suicidal mission by Judy Woodruff.
Exploring the U.S.'s relationship and in putting Noriega in power to begin with, and how they've switched.
Okay, let's tune in to...
Okay, yeah, we should point out, you are listening to the Church of the Subgenius. This was the first show on the air that broadcast any sort of, not any sort of church-type show, but we've had reports from some of our sources that there is another radio station in town that's doing a mockery of what we do here quite seriously and quite religiously, no pun intended, every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so I asked Bob to bring in his Bob Blaster, and we've got the station tuned in. So why don't I just move the mic over to the Ghetto Blaster, and we can turn the volume up a little. I think they're just playing music.
Maybe they're late, Mike.
This is CIUT. This show is called The Church of Green Eggs and Ham. And from our sources, we've heard that they make fun of Bob and the Church of the Subunion. It's a very, very dangerous thing to do.
I can't seem to explain why is it that every time I get to feel this way, I just have to remember that you got the
power. Sentimentalism.
I think that's enough of that.
I think
we can. We'll stay tuned in, though, and maybe as soon as I hear somebody talking, we can just
check them out.
Look into that.
Do some daily espionage, and I think they're picking up on the hymn thing we started 2 weeks ago. I think this is our sentimental hymn period, the beginning of the show, because they can't get many listeners, so they're hymning away to fill in the chance for learning and experiencing new ideas, which they can't do.
Well, I have a feeling tonight, I've got a good feeling tonight about tonight, I think, because the last time we were on, we didn't have access to the phones, but the phone lines are already ringing.
Let's
so
take them.
Do you want to go right there? We don't have a theme. We have no context. We have no frame, but
we have Slack.
But let's pick up the phone anyway, and hopefully the phone will work tonight.
Maybe it's CIUT.
Hi, CKLN. Hello?
Bob?
Hey, how you doing, man?
Bob, are you there?
Is this Tom Rich?
Yeah, you got it.
How you doing, Tom?
How you doing, Bob?
Let us have it, Tom.
Well, I've been out in the field doing research since the International Connection.
That's right, Tom Rich. Tom Rich worked with Adam Vaughn and Bob Marshall up till 1986, and he's been laying low for 4 years. You didn't believe that? And we didn't know when he was coming back, and tonight's the night.
Well, that's right. It's been a quite a long time since we've had an opportunity to talk on the air. And, of course, many thousands and thousands of years have gone by. But I just wondered if you were interested in rolling through an inventory over the last period, because there's quite a lot of patterns beginning to emerge. You take it away. Where do you want to start?
Well, it's interesting. We do have a you heard the first caller, Guru One, Disciple One to Guru One. You heard that first message we just broadcast. Did you catch that?
Yeah, briefly.
Okay, well, that person has left another message, and it's about he noticing Garner Ted Armstrong on the television for some reason. And we're going to maybe play that tonight. But he was asking me to explain Herbert W. Armstrong's vision, since it's a holy office. I don't know if you'd like to talk about that. What do you think? That is a topic that you're informed on in extreme detail. Is that a pattern you see, or are there other areas you want to go into?
Oh, I think I'd rather, as Marshall McLuhan said, sort of stay clear of that right now.
It's elephant traps?
Yeah, there's a lot of elephant traps there, exactly. That's a good way to put it.
Okay. Well,
I was hoping on maybe getting on to some combination of Beater and LaRouche.
I am going to play a Beater thing, and I'll give you a little hint. It's about the significance of the Baku oil fields. You're a long-time researcher into the Kennedy assassination, and you know that George de Morenshield was the control agent for Lee Harvey Oswald. His father ran the Baku oil fields earlier in the century for Nelson Rockefeller and the Rockefeller dynasty. I think the fact that the Rockefeller dynasty was taken over by the Bolsheviks in the early 80s may point to why Azerbaijan and that area, which is the Baku area, is a good sore point and a sort of a position of strength that the Bolsheviks can operate from just at the tip of Iran, which they control.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm thinking in terms of Beter tonight, the significance of the Baku oil fields and the Bolshevik stronghold, that being the borderline point of friction and abrasion leading into the Middle East area controlled by the Bolshevik structure right now. Though they're laying low, but it seems like they're trying to stir up something against Gorby.
I think that one of the interesting things you may want to just elaborate on is the connection with Quebec and that area, and whether or not you've got some further information on it.
Well, I would say that since Quebec was Bolshevik-controlled in the early 80s. That's why the Canadian Prime Minister had to come out of Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I would say that since the Liberals are going to probably win the next election, I think we can look for the candidate that comes out of Quebec to be the winner. I don't know if we could say he would be Bolshevik-controlled, because I think Gorby has some influence in Canada right now, once Mulroney had paid his respects a few months ago.
But
I think the significance of Quebec is that as long as Canada remains relatively Bolshevik-controlled, prime ministers will come out of Montreal, that area.
Yeah, well, there's just so many areas, wide areas that we could go into, and it's very difficult when you're trying to narrow it down.
Well, tell me something. What's a new thing that you've noticed or got more confident about since 1986? Because you discussed a lot of these things then. What have you? What new pattern that maybe you weren't aware of back then seems more strong now to you?
Well, I think the control of space. And the strong control of space that's been solidified by the winners of the Battle of the Harvest Moon is more evident than anything.
Is there something that would you think of that came out the past two or three years that makes you feel more confident about that?
Well, there's certainly a lot. There's certainly a lot going on behind the scenes with regard to the space shuttle that we're not being told, and I think that the timing gets lost, so that the listener quite often is left with merely product and no process. But over the past number of years, I think there's a tremendous tie-in between events on the ground and events up in space. And unfortunately, the process, as I say, and the timing there disappears from people's minds. They don't have time to keep their eye out for it, for the pattern, and so they're left with a feeling, well, they're putting up the space shuttle, they're doing these repairs to these satellites, and they miss the process of what's going on the ground. But I think I could start with the first thing, and that is Haiti and Baby Doc.
Yeah.
And one of the great patterns which I discovered.
Yeah, that's true.
Was the first to discover was the pattern between Baby Doc, Haiti, the space shuttle, and how he's now seeking asylum and still in France. And it's amazing how that story came out and nobody in the press made the connection.
When Challenger blew up?
The French said that they would only hold him for a short while and didn't want to have anything to do with him. And then they waited long enough until that story calmed down. And, of course, it's never been raised since. But I would imagine he's still somewhere in France. And I think that's a key to a lot of what's going on.
Yeah, now France is Bolshevik control.
Well, that's what I'm getting to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the connection there with the space shuttle. And, there's just so many events that we could discuss. But I think that's where the starting point is. We can go back and refresh our memory and say that since then, there's no doubt that there has been. I mean, that's just another indication of the extension of the Battle of the Harvest Moon, the control of space. And when you do have control of space, then you can afford to make internal structural changes within your economy, perestroika-like, glasnost-like, because you don't have to worry about your old hardware enemy attacking you, because you now have control of the high frontier.
Yeah.
So I think perestroika and glasnost is just another extension of 1977 September.
Yeah, September 27th.
Yeah.
What's interesting is you have the abortion of the Bolshevik-controlled NASA space program, the space shuttle program, in January 86. You then have Gorbachev forcing Reagan, Bolshevik-controlled at the time, to go to Reykjavik in October 86.
Right.
And then perestroika and glasnost just burst on the scene through 87 and 88. And by the end of 88, you had Gorbachev fully confident at the United Nations. And then a year later, he knocks down the wall. I had my predictions I gave in October 16, 1988, where I predicted the reunification of Germany and the decentralizing of the Eastern European, Gorby's empire there. But we should admit that the reason I know that is that if you understand the Battle of Harbor Smoke and Prosecutor's information,
right,
you have a real confident handle on what happened in the 80s and what's going to happen in the future. And the newest development for me in the for the Battle of Harvest Moon is the old Rockefeller gang using the Russian space program to get their business satellites up. That really shows the Rockefeller grouping giving in to Gorbachev's control and moving to Russia and operating with their space program, while the Pentagon hopelessly tries to catch up with delayed space shuttles. I mean, it's pretty faulty how they... have they inspired any confidence the last few months in going up on that space shuttle? They have so many delays and problems, it's humorous.
Well, of course, there is a window in which they're allowed to operate, and I think that the tie-in between the militaries that we saw in the middle of last year, I guess it was August, when the Americans visited the Russians and the Russians visited the Americans, were a way of saying, a way of arranging it such that it's an ersatz, a series of...
artificial.
Yeah, you can fill it in. A series of ersatz environments.
Yeah, anti-environments. Yeah.
Anti-environments such that now they can coordinate future space shuttles so that they could guarantee that there was no threat.
From the Bolshevik-controlled Pentagon. And the fact that Bush, who may be a Rockefeller man and seems to have been, according to Dr. Beter, the fact that he is working under Gorby's control, maybe they've retaken the Pentagon in the space shuttle program.
Yeah, we'd have to wait and for that pattern either way to emerge. But I definitely think that there's, as once again, there's a tremendous amount going on behind the scenes that isn't spelled out, not talked about, except on by people like no longer Beter, but by you. Just to throw a new pattern at you, one that hasn't got a lot of connections but of interest, is the recent one. When you talk Bolsheviks, the Reichman, Campo, Bush, son of Bush, director of the SNL. I think there's a tremendous connection there, but not enough of the tip of the iceberg has emerged in order to really tell where it is, but I smell something there, and I really can't put my finger on it yet. It's just too fresh.
Did you hear, maybe you didn't hear, our Skolnick broadcast where he said that the $1.5 billion missing in Bush's son's SNL in Denver, Colorado, maybe the same $1.5 billion that went through Panama under Noriega, which then went to the Peruvian embassy to help the Argentinian gang in the Falklands War, that $1.5 billion coming from the Banco Ambrosiano in the Vatican. So you have the...
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, so you have the Vatican problem, Noriega, Bush's son being investigated now by Senate committees, and the Peruvian rejection of the Panamanian invasion by the states. These connections seem to me to be a pressure by the militarized, the Bolshevik gang in the military, putting pressure on the Rockefeller White House, because the Rockefellers had a big input into the Vatican.
Yeah.
And even though it was temporarily controlled by the Bolsheviks, but I would say Archbishop Marcinkus was the Rockefeller man who was forced to go in hiding from 82 to 88. You have that pressure on Bush happening right now, and as Sherman Skolnick pointed out, the pressure on Gorbachev this past month. I think you have a Bolshevik attempt to take over and make some inroads into the Rockefeller-Gorbachev-Russian-Skopsky alliance happening over this past month with this attempt at the Baku oil fields in Azerbaijan and the pressure on Bush. I think that's why he was forced to invade Panama by the Pentagon, so they could do, as a Bolshevik control group, do some drug dealing, negotiating, and keep their military hardware in shape in Central America while they prepare and retrench in the Middle East. That's how I see what's happening.
Yeah, well, there certainly are a lot of patterns that support the patterns that you're saying are happening. There's a lot there that you could bounce a ball off of, so that I hadn't seen before. But the way you're explaining it certainly does sort of tie in things that I've been seeing before. It's interesting. There's really there's so much going on that if you don't keep in regular contact, it's hard to know where to pick back up. But things definitely are speeding up at a tremendously faster rate, even faster than just when we spoke last year.
Yeah.
But certainly, the countdown is on, and I really don't know what point in the countdown we are, but we're certainly well past the halfway mark, it seems.
Yeah, you don't know whether we're going. I mean, countdown, we're going into captivity. Do you think North America's going into captivity?
Without going into a tremendous amount of detail on this one, I think that if we continue on the present course we're going, we will definitely go into captivity.
And that includes the free trade?
I'm saying that the people, the whole country,
yeah,
the continent will go into captivity.
So basically you're saying we would if we don't understand what's going on.
And I mean, that's right. And I mean, we are already in economic captivity.
Yeah.
And political and literal captivity is merely the next step down the line. And the decision as to, we could go into that right away. There's nothing preventing it from happening today other than a decision of a few people.
Yeah.
It's that just that conditions aren't ripe yet for them to go ahead and want to make that decision. But once the decision's made, it can be put into action very quickly. And that means that the lights are going to go out.
Well, I think of Europe, and we talked about France being Bolshevik-controlled. I found it interesting that Mitterrand, if he is Bolshevik-controlled, double or whatever, that he moved fast when the Berlin Wall was moved down. I find it interesting to decide whether Gorby is working with a united Europe and is trying to move faster than a organized united Europe, fortress Europe. That's what I think the drama is right now, and that's why the Vatican's lurking in the background. Their position in relation to Gorbachev is a big question.
Yeah, that's a big mouthful. It's hard to really, everybody in his own way is trying to do what he thinks is best for his people and what's good for him. Of course, there's a certain amount of greed and selfishness and wanting to hoard power. But basically, I think people are pretty well, even many people like a guy like Gorbachev doesn't necessarily mean because he's the public figure at the top that, I mean, he could be as loose as a useful fool. There's
yeah.
nothing to say that he has any great vision or powers of perception or awareness of what's really going on. He may just be an executive surfboarding on the surfboard, being
okay.
carried along, and just happened to have found himself on that surfboard.
Okay, Tom, you're an expert on McLuhan. I want to read you a quote I brought in. This is from Time Magazine, January 1st, 1990 issue.
Yeah.
The cover was Man of the Decade, and it had Gorbachev's picture on the cover. This is what Lance Morrill, who wrote the essay, says about Gorbachev. Now, Lance Morrill is the son of Hugh Morrill,
yeah.
and Hugh Morrill was Nelson Rockefeller's press spokesman who lied about Nelson Rockefeller's murder in
yeah.
January 1979.
Yeah.
And then, according to Dr. Bader, Hugh Morrill was murdered later. And now you have a son, Lance Morrill, writing this way. And if Morrill is working... Lance Morrill is working for the Rockefeller-Gorby Alliance. Listen to what he says here.
Yeah.
This is the last two paragraphs. Gorbachev is a sort of Zen genius of survival, a nimble performer who can dance a sidestep, a showman and manipulator of reality, a suave wolf tamer. He has a way of turning desperate necessities into opportunities and even virtues. Much more than that, Gorbachev is a visionary enacting a range of complex and sometimes contradictory roles. He is simultaneously the communist pope and the Soviet Martin Luther, the apparatchik or bureaucrat, the apparatchik as Magellan and McLuhan. The man of the decade is a global navigator. What do you think of that, knowing what you know about McLuhan and the fact the emperor has no clothes?
Yeah, I think that the terms that he's using are applicable in that in the office he's using it within, by which I mean I think that Gorbachev does understand how to influence people and manipulate people to do the things that he feels have to be done. I think there is a terrific tie-in between Gorbachev and the large Russian religious establishment, which was invisible to Western eyes through pretty well since the revolution.
Yeah.
But they were there behind the scenes. They did lose a great degree of power, external power, but they still, as a unit and as a group, kept a strong organization. And of course, because of their nature, being a religious body, had a tremendous sort of internal network of communication. And I think Gorbachev is very much tied to that. He comes from the Andropov, Romanov side of things, as we know. And so I think that he does wear many hats. He's both a leader of a large religious group within the Soviet Union, when I say leader, put it, let's say, not to use leader in our terms, but is backed by that religious body.
Yeah.
So that even though he's not sort of elected leader or emotionally springs from that group, he's now, a great degree of his power is propped up by that religious body. And I think that you see that in the change of what's going on in Russia with the attitude towards religion. And he does understand the media, as McLuhan did. He understands, although I think it should be pointed out for our listeners that basically, overall, it was McLuhan's belief that Western literate man was the most, his technology blinded him the most to understanding its effects, whereas the Russians and the Eastern societies weren't as blinded to the effects of their technology. So the Russians understood the danger of, as he said, radioactive toys, and understood the effects of the Xerox machine and the... I'm starting to sound like Barrington here. Understood the Xerox machine and the effect of television and these things, and it seems that a guy like Gorbachev would have come from a culture which naturally right off the bat understands the effects of these technologies, and so he would be sort of probably the only leader of the century who's has such a firm grasp and understanding of it. I don't know anyone else in a leadership role who had as great a grasp of it in this century as Gorbachev did. Even Churchill, I don't think, did.
Okay, Tom, I got the signal. Maybe we should go.
Yeah, maybe we should.
Listen, would you call? If you can, keep listening. If there's some more points you want to make and we're not getting any other calls, you can call back.
Yeah, I can't guarantee anything,
okay,
but I'll do my best. But just to wrap it up, wanted to touch base with you and say it's nice talking to you again in this forum. And I guess we should pass on some sort of little tidbits to think about in the future. Have you got anything that you wanted to throw out as to little things that should be watched for?
You mean in events?
Yeah, events. Either in any way that come to mind, that things that we should watch for. And I guess we're getting the music there, so I'll say to you, good luck.
I say we watch the music.
Watch the music.
Yeah.
Nice talking to you again, Bob.
Thanks for calling in, Tom. Appreciate you participating on CKLN.
Enjoyed your dialogue. It was great. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's the other station. Well, Mike, I got something.
Not much happening there, Bob, at CIUT.
It's just music. They haven't talked yet?
They have talked, but they haven't said anything of any importance, so...
Do they take calls?
They might. He hasn't said anything to that
effect. Jeez, it's pretty low-key church.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know how to master discarnate states. Okay, Mike, while we wait for future calls, I got a couple of notes to say. Tom Richard put a lot of input into working at CKLN. As a matter of fact, the special mic that they use at CKLN for, deluxe interviews was donated to the station by Tom Rich 3 or 4 years ago. We should thank him for that. And he contributed a lot from 84 to 86 at the station and participated every Saturday morning with Adam Vaughn and Bob Marshall. So I always appreciate him listening. He knows what I'm talking about.
We should say that we only have about 15 minutes left. That was a pretty long phone call, yeah. So it ate up a big chunk of the show, but it was, a worthwhile call. That you are listening to the Church of the Subgenius. My name is Michael Dyer with J.R. Bob Dobbs, and the number, if you don't know, if you're a new listener, is 595-1478. If you have a question for Mr. Dobbs, but Bob, you want to reach into the files? And
yeah, I have... I like to juxtapose these thoughts, which become percepts. The idea that the emperor has no clothes, and we've explained that the modern clothing is the electric environment, and then the various mixed media combinations thereof. Then you take the discovery of the 20th century, the technique of the suspended judgment. And then you have the thought that the oligarchs now rule, the emperor now rules, not by imposing a myth on man's passions, but by ruling through men and women and humankind's passions. So the new myth is the passions themselves. And then you have the complaint that modern education has no values. And the significance of Watergate showed that no one was at the switchboard. Nowhere man is the emperor. Since we have a call, we'll just lay that out and develop that pattern later. Let's take the call.
Too impatient.
Oh, okay.
Don't go to those calls right away.
All right, so...
Okay, there's the phone again, so let's try it again. Hi, CKLN.
Hello?
Hi.
Oh, am I in there?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Edward X. Hello, Michael. Hello, Bob.
Hello, Ed.
Hi. I just, after the last caller, I thought, paranoid conspiracy, international power brokers that we mere mortals know little about. You know a lot about it, Bob, but I'm just a mere mortal.
Yep.
And your other caller and... man at the top of the show was very well informed. It's too bad about his nose being plugged like that, but what he had to say was quite fascinating. I just wanted to ask about one small thing because, just since about last April, your cosmology has just been gradually unfolding for me in little pieces, and there's no text you can, a pastor could say, well, Eddie X, go read a particular chapter and study up, but your students have to study in such a diverse way.
Yeah.
But I just want to know about one of the holy offices that very seldom gets mentioned. I just heard the mention of it in passing. I some of your listeners, your many thousands of listeners who were tying up the phones of making it hard for me to get through, might want to know about Garrett Dean. Am I correct in saying he's one of the holy officers?
Yes, he's the personal holy office of Bob and Connie.
Oh, so is there kind of a confidentiality clause in his contract? Or?
No, it's just that there's not much of him on tape that we can play. The only access you can get to him is on the series put out by Bob Marshall called Who's Forgotten Furry Lint. There's the opening segment is with the charismatic Garrett Dean. I wouldn't like to go into much about him right now.
Okay.
I do have some other tapes of him. Maybe I should feature him some point and come in, but that's the Holy Office number 9, and that's a personal one, and I just sort of just remind people that there are some personal background and connections in Bob Dobbs' career, aside from the more public functions of McLuhan, LaRouche, Dr. Beter, Zappa, Mae Brussel, Skolnick, and Herbert W. Armstrong, and James Joyce.
What about Herbert W. Armstrong? Many shows go by, and I'm a little bit sentimental about Herbert W. because his son had an interesting history, and you just said earlier that Garner Ted Armstrong is sort of starting to become come to light again in the media somewhere.
Yeah, I think, Eddie, it's time to play the tape I mentioned earlier. The,
oh, okay.
The first caller that you were impressed with, the one with the clogged nose,
yeah.
His doppelganger left a message also at the headquarters explaining and asking more about Herbert W. Armstrong. And so I think this is the time. And his summary of the main point of Herbert W. Armstrong is well summarized on this phone message. So let's go to that. Eddie, you can hang on. Can we keep him on the line? Okay, Eddie, if you want to respond, call back. But
okay.
we got to hang up. But here, we'll play
okay.
you. We'll give you what you want right now.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bob, I was cruising the TV channels and came across a face I had not seen for a long time. That is Garner Ted Armstrong. And he was saying that prophecies are not to be interpreted. They should be taken literally line by line. In his words, quote, precept upon precept, unquote. Now, clearly, he hasn't been listening to the church, because he would know that it should have been percept upon percept. And I wondered if this might have been a clue as to why Herbert, his father, had his son taken off his show, The World Tomorrow. So that might tie in with a theme you'd raised a couple of weeks ago, that of the holy office of Herbert W. Armstrong. And with the events unfolding as rapidly as they are in Eastern Europe, this is probably the time to go into it. But Garner Ted was doing his own little bit of work there, and he was talking about the dream of King Nebuchadnezzar as the dream was divinely interpreted by Daniel. And he was citing some interesting paragraphs from the Bible, of course. Thou, O King, soft, and behold a great image, this great image whose brightness was excellent stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. This image's head was of fine gold, his breasts and his arms of silver, his belly and his thigh of brass, his legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. And then he turned to Revelations and went into an update, the prophecy. And he says, and the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast, those who have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. And, of course, the implications that Garner Ted was drawing from that was the deposed kings in Eastern Europe just waiting to take the throne, referring to a deposed Habsburg king, ancestor that sits now in the European Parliament, and to the king of Romania, which he didn't name, but it's King Zog. And we've seen King Zog wiped up in the Costa Gravis film, Zog, in that one, Zionist Occupation Government. So, comments there. How does the work of Herbert W. Armstrong come to pass in Eastern Europe? And we have one other thing, different topic altogether, but it is prophecy, and we should include this. The Mayan and Aztec calendars come to an end on August the 16th and 17th, 1987. August the 16th, 1987 marks the conclusion of a cycle of 13 heavens and 9 hells, a total of 22 cycles, each 52 years in duration. The 13 heaven cycles of decreasing choice began in 843 AD and ended Good Friday, 1519, the day Cortez landed in Mexico. The 9 hell cycles of increasing doom, which end on August the 16th, 1987, complete the cycle known as the fifth sun, the centerpiece of the famous Aztec calendar stone. August the 16th and 17th, 1987, marks the critical moment in the calendar's great cycle, from 3113 BC to 2012 AD, when the wave of history climaxes and a new age dawns, initiating a 25-year return movement to close out the cycle in 2012. The return movement, correlated to the sixth sun, refers to a dawning solar age, the establishment of cosmic consciousness among all humanity, and by 2012, entry into galactic civilization. And your comments, please.
Okay. Mike, do we have a call?
Yeah, we've okay. had quite a few people actually waiting, Bob.
Okay, I'll answer those questions in a minute. Let's take the callers. They have
okay.
priority.
All right. Let me just try this. Yeah, so just a reminder that because we are winding down, to keep your calls brief and, Bob, not to go off into a trance.
Okay.
Tyson Callan.
Bob.
Yeah.
Quick one, it's Tom Rich again.
Yeah.
I forgot to tell you, the Trigger Man is coming into town tomorrow night. He's speaking tomorrow night at a private affair in Toronto. So you can announce that.
That's Henry Kissinger?
Yeah.
And are you attending?
Yeah.
Okay, you'll be able to maybe tell us something someday.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Bye.
Okay, that's interesting.
Oh.
That's Henry Kissinger coming to Toronto and...
private function.
Sorry, Bob.
That's a radio. There goes CIUT. I'll see if they went off the air. Damn, Mike's just checking. He just broke the transmitter. The thing is sort of... Mike's checking the transmitter. Our espionage on the CIUT. Nothing. Okay, just leave that for now. Mike, it's really interesting to bring up the council, the Secret Council of Ten. I think the subgenius summary of the significance of the Holy Office of Herbert W. Armstrong helps people understand what the Secret Council of Ten refers to, the Ten Kings. Now, you got, as you know, I was a member of the Secret Council of Ten for years, and when the election happened in March, actually end of February 24th, 1988, the results were read. This is the election for chairperson of the Secret Council 10. The results were read the next week, the 1st of March. I think it was March 3rd. And you notice the candidates were Prince Charles. You know, the four that competed were Prince Charles. I think there was Turnin-Taxis, Prince Turnin-Taxis. And a Romanov from Russia, representing a certain aristocratic traditions in Russia, and myself, and I beat them out. But the fact we had two princes and another man with the name of a former royal dynasty was indicative of the meaning of the Secret Council of Ten. It's the fact that I have to infiltrate the Secret Council of Ten, and this is what I was talking about with Tom Rich earlier, in the fact of Gorby working for me has to work with the inevitable Herbert W. Armstrong.